welcome to this fresh episode of the ISCN podcast, the podcast of the International Smart Cities Network. My name is Leah Hemmetsberger, and my guest today is Axel McCallum. He is the Undersecretary for Administrative Innovation of the City of Buenos Aires, Argentina's capital. And we are talking today about how Buenos Aires is working with and publishing data for better urban planning, and also how to drive innovation in a city government as big as Buenos Aires. Enjoy.
A very warm welcome to you, Axel McCallum, from Buenos Aires City Government. Very happy to have you here today on the podcast of the International Smart Cities Network. Mr. McCallum, please tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Hi, Leah. First of all, thank you for the invitation. Very happy to be here on the podcast. As you mentioned, I work for the City of Buenos Aires. I'm the Undersecretary for Administrative Innovation. What that means is that my teams manage some of the systems that are used either by the citizens for procedures with government or within government to respond to those procedures that are initiated by the citizens. We also work with data. So another of the teams have data portals, the open data portal for the city government, a data portal for urban planning called Ciudad 3D, and they also work with data procedures within government that can help improve our administrative procedures.
That sounds like you have a lot to do with your team, and I'm pretty curious now, how big is the size of the team? I mean, Buenos Aires is at the moment 14 million people, like in the whole area, in the metropolitan area. How many people are on your team?
So the whole metropolitan area is around 14 million, but in the city of Buenos Aires, the city limits itself, there's 3 million inhabitants. We do have a daily influx, a large daily influx from the larger Buenos Aires area into the city government limits. And it's a big team because we do manage a lot of different systems, right? So each system gets its own team to maintain that system and to create new systems as needed. And they're separated in different departments according to the type of system and the service that's provided. In the data side, we must have around 30 people working in different products, separated into four major teams, which are subdivided into more specific teams.
Well, that's pretty cool. But it's also not as many people as I would have thought are working in Buenos Aires, because you are doing, I think, a lot yourself. But before we start right into your job, I have another question, which I'm always asking my guests here in the ISCN podcast. You live and work in Buenos Aires, and I'm very curious because we're also talking about urban development and, you know, making the city oftentimes a better place, a more effective place, a more efficient place. But I'm curious to know, what's your favorite spot in Buenos Aires and why?
So first of all, to anybody who's listening, if you ever get a chance to come to Buenos Aires, I highly recommend it. It's a beautiful city, a lot of nice tourist places to visit, and a lot of nice neighborhoods that maybe are out of the tourist map, which are really nice to visit as well. I'm a bigger fan of those quiet neighborhoods, low-rise neighborhoods. We are also on a riverfront, so I also appreciate those spots on the riverfront where you can go and relax a bit. And if you do come to Buenos Aires, visit all the main spots, but also make some time to go to one of those quieter places and enjoy that side of the city.
That I can only underline. Actually, you don't know, I think, but I studied in Buenos Aires for 5 months, but it was more than 10 years ago, unfortunately, and I think the city changed a lot since then. But yeah, as you said, I also love the city, and I can also highly recommend everyone to just go and explore if you have the chance. But also, you know, you just said it, like you have tourist hotspots, you have the inner city, you have low-rise areas, calmer areas, the riverfront, an airport in the middle of the city, basically, as well. And also many people coming in and out of the city every day. As far as I understood it, your job sort of as part of the city government is to make the government more innovative, but also more efficient in sort of what you do. And this is quite, in my understanding, a really complex task, right? It's a massive city, lots of people, lots of different processes. How do you approach your tasks, actually? How do you go about it?
That's a really good question. First of all, there's a team of specialists that work in this. I'm here talking and representing on their behalf. The way we go about it is we think technology is a great enhancer, right? And we believe that by applying technology to government procedures, we can save time both for the citizens, for the neighbors of the city, and for government in our back office when we have to go through those procedures to make decisions, grant authorizations. So what we do is that we work with the different departments in government that are responsible for the procedures citizens have to go through. And we try to provide systems, maintain those systems, and improve processes on those systems. Basically, every department is responsible for setting up the rules. And sometimes it has to go through the legislative body. Sometimes it's on the executive side. But whatever rules are defined, we try to provide the best processes for applying those rules. Those that save times aren't redundant. Redundant by that, I mean, is sometimes we ask citizens to present the same set of papers or PDF files, digital papers, multiple times. When we already have that information and we can save them time and have a better process by validating that ourselves. And that's one of the main ways we go about trying to make the city more innovative. And then we use data. So we're recording this in December 2024. City of Buenos Aires has been going along a path of digitization for the last 10, 12 years, maybe even a bit more. So many of the things we are doing today, we can do because people in the last decade or more have been investing time and solving previous problems. And throughout all those years, a lot of data was generated. We can use this data to improve our procedures. We can also use these data to publish it in open data format and make it publicly available for citizens and to receive their inputs on what the government is doing. And I think that covers our main strategies.
So what you just mentioned is that you're using data in various ways already, and basically to improve also the life of citizens to make it easier for them to go about it. You published open data, I think, very early on. I remember that when I researched for my master thesis in 2015, that I already saw Buenos Aires open data. And you also have developed Ciudad 3D, which you just mentioned as well, which is a city 3D model. And some would call it a digital twin. I'm curious, what was the motivation behind developing Ciudad 3D? Was it also to improve processes in this case?
Ciudad 3D and the Open Data Portal were built before my time. Part of the team that did that is still working in government, and that was a great initiative, both initiatives. The motivation behind Ciudad 3D was to provide information to private individuals, companies, or persons who want to go about getting a building permit, either for building something from the ground up or for modifying existing buildings. And it was a way to represent visually, digitally, the urban code and what's allowed and what's not allowed in different sectors of the city. The usual way of defining an urban code is a law with a long set of regulations of what's allowed and not allowed in different areas. And what Ciudad 3D does is builds this law into a digital model and shows an intuitive way to visualize this for any user. You can visualize the urban code itself, what the construction volumes that are allowed, the different heights that are allowed in different parts of the city, the soil uses that are allowed. And you can select different parcels within the city to see the current and existing volumes that are already constructed there. You can see the difference between what's already constructed and what's allowed to be constructed there. And that's a very useful information for people who are planning their development projects.
Mm-hmm. And it's basically a tool that everyone can use, right? I mean, it's open on the web. I could go there and see if I could plan. So you can be one person, but you can also be a big development company to use this tool, I assume.
Exactly. Yes, it's free for use. There's no logging. You can just access and see this information. The information that's there is public. There's a curation process, and all the data that's available is public for everybody to use. Picking up on your previous question is, so the motivation was on making this information publicly available. Mm-hmm. That's an improvement on the process itself, because if you put data out there, people can make better decisions and are better informed decisions at least. So part of the governments, I tend to break down governments' interactions with citizens around permits, like in three sectors. One is like the informational sector, segment, might be a better word in English, the informational segment, the transactional segment, which is when you present documentation to the city. And then there's the procedural where the city receives those papers, goes through them and authorizes or doesn't a certain activity. So Ciudad 3D really works on the informational segment. It puts information out there for citizens to be able to make better informed decisions on their projects. So when they start on the transaction segment, they're already better informed on what's allowed and not allowed. And then that should also improve the procedural segment. But that was just like an initial phase, right? Because we went on building after that, and this is all work that's led by the Department of Urban Development in the city of Buenos Aires. They're improving the interfaces we use with citizens for them to present their documentation. And we can go a little bit more into that if that's something of interest.
Yeah. So basically, this relates back to what you said before. You have the information already and trying not to request the same information again and again, a bit like a once-only principle. Is that sort of the way you go about it?
Yes, that's a part of it. So when we're trying to improve the interface with citizens, is if we make all information available, but we make citizens interpret that information by themselves, we're not really guiding them through that process of getting to where the procedures they want to get to, right? So generally, urban codes and or permit processes are complex processes, because there's a very wide variety of economic activities, building activities that can take place within a city. So what we try to do is build a more intuitive interface with citizens, where citizens tells us their needs. We ask them simple questions and guide them towards the procedure they want to perform. Once they get to that procedure, yes, we try to apply the once-only principle. If it's a new project, there's a lot of documentation that's very specific to that project. So maybe there the once-only principle won't apply, because we do need those building plans and the specifics on the project itself. If it's a construction company that has multiple projects going on, we should be able to not ask for some of the company specific information every time they want to do a new project, right? Because that's specific to the company and not to the project. So yes, we try to implement the once only principle through our XBA interpretability system, which is based off a Nextroad software from Europe, from Estonia, actually.
Oh, yeah, I heard about it. So you are actually collaborating with Estonia on the Xroad project.
We're implementing our local instance of Xroad. That's one of the ways we are trying to improve procedures within government, using data the government has in specific departments to simplify processes for citizens, right? So not to ask them for something which government already gave them, and ask the emitting department directly for that information.
That's pretty cool. I'm curious, do you know how this cooperation with Xroad and Estonia came to be? I mean, it is fairly, you know, a long distance between Estonia and Argentina in this case.
Well, it is, but that's also the thing about technology, right? In the digital age, we're all listening to other cities, what other countries are doing, and what are the best practices what we can implement here. So this kicked off a couple of years ago in Buenos Aires, maybe like 3-4 years ago, like first as an idea, then a proof of concept. There's some other provinces in Argentina which are also working on Xroad, so it's also reaching out to them to see, you know, get to know about their experience. And maybe 2 years ago, we started getting serious with this. We set up the first instance and the first use cases of Xroad. We really started scaling that up last year, and I think we'll be getting to maturity at the end now, around now, the end of this year and next year. And what that means is we're having currently like hundreds of use cases where we stop asking for documentation that we can already validate by ourselves within the government.
That's pretty cool. And I think you mentioned now something that I would like to also dive a little bit into it, like make a little side trip to our conversation. You just mentioned that you are also collaborating with provinces in Argentina. And I know that, for example, Ciudad del Este was developed as open source as well. And I think a lot of stuff that you do is open or at least partially open source. How is your role as Buenos Aires city government in this exchange with other provinces in Argentina? Like, are they seeing you as giving examples, or is this really like a give and take on different topics? Is there more collaboration also happening?
Yes, there is collaboration. And going back to this idea that maybe the city of Buenos Aires started along the road of digitization earlier on than other provinces. We who are currently working here, the city of Buenos Aires, can build on the work that was done before us, right? So sometimes when we talk with other provinces, each team is at their own point along this road of becoming a more digital government, right? So I think, yes, city of Buenos Aires has a lot of experience to share with other provinces because we started early on. We have some experience, and we're going through maybe our second or third iteration on some of the projects. So we can definitely share our experience on what our teams have gone through and how our digital products are maturing over time. But there's a lot of very interesting thing going along the whole country. So, for example, installing X-Road and using that within the country, we reached out to some teams in different provinces and asked them for their experience and how did they set it up, what specific configurations they use. And maybe those are very technical conversations, but there is collaboration going on. Some levels of conversations, and when that tends to grow and formalize, we can sometimes sign partnerships with different provinces and make that collaboration grow and extend itself over time.
This is really a nice example, and I would wish to see this happen a lot more, especially also within a country. So basically with X-Road, you combine, first of all, an intercontinental cooperation with Estonia in this case. And on the other hand, it also allows you to cooperate with different provinces within Argentina. I'm just wondering one more question about X-Road, and then we just sort of finish our little side trip and come back to the geodata topic. How do you organize sort of this knowledge exchange with Estonia? Do you have sort of regular meetings, or is there some sort of framework that you're working in? Or is it just depending on whether you need some support or more information?
There isn't a formal agreement between governments to exchange information or a formal partnership. But what the X-Road community has done, they have yearly community events, and there's people from the X-Road team, their time available for people trying to implement X-Road to guide and counsel them, us, on how to go about some of the technical difficulties we go through. So I'd say it's like a technical collaboration on specific issues. But when you're starting to implement new technology, that's really important, because it's when you're starting with new technology, there's a lot of unknowns. And when you get the opportunity to have maybe like an hour long or 2 hour long conversation with somebody who's gone through that before, they really help you accelerate that implementation process. Also having technical documentation available on public portals, that kind of thing, which is readily available for the X-Road community, really helps. So the kind of collaboration that has been limited to that technical collaboration and on a like a sporadic exchange. But that's really, really fundamental when you're starting off with a new implementation.
Actually, in the context of starting new sort of implementations of technologies and developing new technologies, introducing new innovation, how do you go in Buenos Aires about involving different stakeholders in this development process, and which stakeholders do you usually consult? Is there sort of a blueprint that you're following, or does it depend on the innovation that we're talking about?
So I think it depends. These stakeholders depend around the the solution you're working on, right? So if you're talking about urban development, you have a set of stakeholders. If you're talking about open data, you have another set of stakeholders. And also what kind of project it is. So sometimes when you're working with a new, trying to implement a new technology, you first start talking to internal stakeholders and technological experts to have a proof of concept to make sure that you can implement that and that you can commit yourself as a government, as a public administration to a long-term project. Then when you're at that stage, you can start talking to like external actors, stakeholders, and get their inputs and get their inputs and set up the like the legal frameworks to go forward with the project. To give an example from Beadata, which is our open data portal, what we've been doing this year is we've been setting up meetings with users. So we use like social networks to mm-hmm. let people know that we're going to host a meeting with users. There's no requirements. Whoever is interested in coming, we can come. There's mm-hmm. only like a space requirement because the size of the room, basically. And anybody is invited. And we want to hear what our users are saying about our portal because we want that input to improve our portal and to define our backlog for the development process, right? So this is the also the thing about technology. It's not about having the right solution at the time. It's also maintaining that solution over time, right? So as you mentioned, the open data portal was developed a lot many years ago. It's based on CCAM, which is an open source project, and it's readily available and used around the world. But we try to be sensitive to what our users are needing from that platform, right? So for example, some of the things that came up this year is sometimes when you're working with open data and there's problems with the data sets, we try to minimize that, but that does occur. So we're giving them a channel where they can directly set up a petition for government to fix that data set. Also, open data, it's not only about having the data published, but also frequently updating that information. And once you grow to a certain size and you have like over 400 data sets as we have in that open data portal, it gets tough to maintain that information over time. So we're working on automatizing that process and standardizing how we call different data fields in different data sets so it's cross-compatible for users on the other side. So we do try to get information from stakeholders too, because that will improve our decision process and make the end product more sensitive to their needs. And as a government, that will mean we're providing better service for them.
Nice. I mean, that's pretty cool. So it's a regular community call, basically, community meetup in person, and then you get gathering user feedback, user experience, insights, but also wishes and maybe also use cases, I assume, right? What are people doing with the data, trying to sort of find out how does it help the community? What are you doing in sort of publishing data?
Oh, yes. So that's something we started doing this year. We definitely aim to keep that going next year. We also want to do some, we already hosted one meeting, which is like specific to a certain topic, like transportation. That was this year. We want mm-hmm. to do that other meetings with other topics along the years. We want to get to know the different users. Sometimes, mm-hmm. and so you do always get different type of stakeholders, right? So with open data, you have the expert users. You also have journalists that use that portal a lot. But you also have amateur users who are like making their first steps in mm-hmm. working with data. And sometimes they have different needs. And it's good practice to try to get your portal to accommodate to the needs of as many people as you can accommodate.
When we had our prep call and when we discussed a little bit the focus for this episode, you also told me that you are currently working to launch, or you have already launched, now maybe it's the great unraveling, a geospatial data portal. And now I'm pretty curious. So you have a digital twin with Ciudad Treste and you have an open data portal. So how does the geospatial data portal fit into this already existing environment?
Right. So the geospatial portal will be launched in the first trimester of 2025. So depending when you're listening to this, if we've already launched it or not, but we're very well along the path of launching it. So how does it fit in as a solution? Right now, we have an open data portal. We have Ciudad 3D, which is a digital representation of the urban code and the urban development environment of the city. What we found is that when we wanted to work with geospatial data in government, with layers coming from different departments, from different topics, there wasn't an easy way to go about that, right? Mm-hmm. Either from the citizen's perspective or from a government employee's perspective. So what we developed is using some standards called for the setting up of digital infrastructures. Wait, sorry, that's not the right term. It would be the infraestructura de datos espaciales. That translation would be geospatial digital infrastructure. Using those standards, we are setting up our portal where we're going to make available for citizens publicly available geospatial layers. Mm-hmm. And that's also going to have a government employee interface for employees who want to use layers from different departments to have all that readily available at one place. So that's what's really interesting about geospatial information is that you can cross-reference layers from different topics. So, for example, if we're talking about urban development, you can have information on the city grid, the parcels, as a layer. You can also add a transportation layer. You can also add a public services layer onto that, such as education, such as health services, such as police and fire departments. This portal will allow us to cross all that type of information at an easy place to access and manipulate.
Nice. That sounds pretty exciting as well. And just encouraging everyone who's listening to follow what you're doing then also in Buenos Aires and keep looking out for the new geospatial data portal then as soon as it's launched. What I'm also wondering, like, because we're also talking about urban development processes and also in the context of the digital twin and also geospatial data, you told me when we first met also that it's in planning to develop some policies, for example, for incentives to build in certain areas or to renovate buildings, to use also the tool for projections and simulations. And for all of this, a good database, a high quality database usually is quite essential. How are you dealing with that within an organization that is as big as the city government in Buenos Aires to ensure that the data quality is sort of good enough?
That's something, it's really interesting to talk about that because that comes up a lot in our conversations with other teams in government. It's not only about having data, but making sure that data is of a good enough quality for whatever decision you want to make. I think about it as in stepping stones, right? Well, we're at a certain way along a path of stepping stones to get to like a pure digital representation of the city with all the information there. So we do have Ciudad 3D, which is a digital representation of the urban code and a lot of urban development related information there. With this new portal we're going to soon launch, we're going to have a lot of complementary information about services and geospatial related information within the city of Buenos Aires. I think the first step there is making information available. Because once information is available, people start accessing that information, start trying to use it, and start seeing the limitations that information has. So having a data layer that's 10 years old in a city as dynamic as the city of Buenos Aires is probably not good enough. So that would also generate a demand to keep that information updated. So what we're doing, first step is making this information available for people who need to use it. That's going to generate a demand for better information and the metadata that's associated to the data layers is really important because that tells you who's the owner of that data layer, who's responsible for updating that, what was the date of the last update. And that starts helping ensure that data is up to date and it can be used. It's of a sufficient quality and precision to be used for decision making in the city.
I find it quite interesting that you say, just get the data out there and let's see what comes back and not being shy to maybe publish not a high quality data set, How do you, or have you, maybe that's a different sort of questions, have you experienced within your organizations also people that have pushed back on that, saying, no, we can't put it out if it's not, you know, triple checked. We need to make sure it's high quality. We can't just publish anything. Like, have you experienced this? Or if yes, how have you dealt with this?
We do have quality assurance processes mm-hmm. before we publish data. That's also really important. So our information is good enough to be out there.
Okay.
Right? If it isn't, we have a responsibility not to publish it because it's not accurate information, and whatever we put out there or whatever we use to make decisions within government has to be good enough. So our quality assurance has like two sides to it. One is data quality, and we have a data quality team that really works on this. And we're also setting up, there's already some online available resources on guides and manuals, procedures for assuring data quality in different departments across the city. And that's really important. It's something we have to work with and train people who work with data and generate data to ensure that in the data generation process, you're ending up with good quality data that can be mm-hmm. later used for other processes and decisions. And then there's like the legal framework. Not all data can be publicly made available, right? Some data is sensitive, and then we have a very, very large responsibility in safekeeping that information. And there's also data security protocols and infrastructure security protocols, cybersecurity protocals. There's specific departments that also work around that in the city. So that really means that whatever we do publish is at least good enough. But from my perspective, I'm also like ready to accept that it's never going to be perfect, right? So maybe if we publish a certain data set that's updated every year and people need more finer granularity to that information. Mm-hmm. They need it to be more updated more frequently, or maybe they don't need information at the city level. Maybe they need it at the neighborhood level. So there's always iterations you can do on those data sets. And that's where we have to be on the one side, sensitive to whatever our users are needing to access, and also whatever we're going to use for decision-making processes, make sure that information is as good as a quality as possible to ensure it you're feeding a decision process with good inputs.
Yeah, but I really like this, that you have sort of these different steps towards publishing open data. You have these safety nets, a quality assurance, but then also leave this room open for improvement, as you said, like, you know, feedback from the community that you mentioned before, a feedback channel, and all these steps. I think this is really, really relevant. And I hope that many are listening to this and sort of maybe also taking an example there from your side. What I'm also curious is, when we're moving a little bit away from data per se, but looking more towards technology as such, we're living in a world where technology changes and adapts, and there's so many new things every year, every month, almost every day, it looks like. How do you, as a city, deal with this complexity? So you just mentioned, for example, Open Data Buenos Aires. It started quite a while back. You're trying to maintain it, but that's not the only thing that you're taking care of, right?
So I'm going to go back to this concept I mentioned at the beginning of technology as an enhancer, right? Mm-hmm. So we're living in an age where technology is developing at an accelerated level. As a government, as a public administration, I think there's a lot of the newly developed technology we can start incorporating into our processes mm-hmm. to make better decisions, more efficient decisions, save time for citizens, save time for the public administration. Overall, have better processes. They're quicker, but they're also more precise, right? So less prone to errors, or less prone to taking too long to answer to a citizen's request. So there is a technological aspect to that's like the future is a land of opportunity here, right? Because there's so many technological developments going on, and governments have so much they can start incorporating into their processes that there's a lot going to be changing over the next few years, I believe. But we also have to think that about government uses technology to apply a certain rule set, which is set down in law or in administrative procedures. And those are those procedures use technology to implement them, but aren't defined by the technology itself. Technology is an enhancer, but it doesn't define the way government decides how to do things and what is allowed and not allowed within a city. So I think also there's an opportunity to update a rule set, right? So a lot of the way things are done in public administrations are based on a 100-year-old logic, which is still like paper-based logic. Maybe it has been digitalized, but it's the same kind of logic and way to go about procedures. So I think there's an opportunity to rethink procedures in a native digital way. It's not like a particularly new idea, the one I'm talking about. It's largely talked about in different places. There's a lot published about this. But I think that's the opportunity for people who are working in government at the moment in related to technology and how procedures can be improved.
And where do you see the challenges in that, in your day-to-day work, maybe even? Because I can imagine that not everyone wants to change how things have been done in the past. At least that's usually something that, you know, is an argument that, oh, we've always done it like that. It has worked so far. Why should we change? How do you counter an argument like that?
Well, first of all, I do think that they have a point, right? Because government has to set up procedures to be consistent in the way they go about processing different requests and what's authorized and isn't authorized. And they, as a government, we always have to comply with the rule book, right? Laws and whatever procedures are defined. I think there is a good argument for not changing everything all the time, right? Because you also have to be predictable in a way for citizens and people living in that environment. So my counter argument would be, I think we can go about applying those rules in a better way, in a more cost efficient way, in a more time saving way. We can do it by being closer to the citizen. So, for example, the city of Buenos Aires has a chatbot it developed a number of years ago where citizens can interact with the city government through WhatsApp. And that's like every citizen has an access to the government in their phone. So I think some of the challenges are, yes, we are trying to enforce certain procedures to be predictable for citizens. So there is certain constraints to what you can change and not change. But maybe we can go about those procedures in a more efficient way. Another of the challenges is that we talk about technology here. Technology sometimes requires like highly specialized people working in technological products. Maintaining technological products is also a challenge because you have to invest and update them over time. So that's also a challenge in keeping everything you've already built up to date. At the same time, you're building new solutions for the current needs. When you're working in innovation, that's your day-to-day challenge. And maybe our job when you're working in the Department of Innovation is bringing solutions to other areas in government that can make their jobs easier and make the government a friendlier experience for citizens who live in the city.
Nice. I think this, you know, saves me my last question because you already answered it. My question would have been, and maybe you have an additional answer to what you just said, but where do you see sort of Buenos Aires in the next 5 years? What would you wish for?
What I would wish for? When we were talking about the different stages in a procedure, informational, transactional, procedural levels, I think there's a lot we can do with technology there. I think we can be faster, we can be more efficient, we can be more time-saving applying that rule set. And I think there are new technologies that are being developed, artificial intelligence, for example, new softwares that can be used to improve our processes. So what I hope will happen in the next couple of years in the city of Buenos Aires is that we apply these technologies to our existing or updated procedures, but to have to provide a better service for citizens and have faster procedures and answer times from government to citizens. I see there's like huge opportunity there, and I think we have to just execute on that over the next couple of years.
Fantastic. Axel McCallum, thank you so much for joining the ISCM podcast and for giving us a glimpse into what you are doing with your team in Buenos Aires and how you are using technology, data, digital twin tools, to improve city and to improve the way how citizens can engage with the city and the city government. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for the invitation and looking forward to engaging with the listeners and the community on whatever questions that might come up.
So my key takeaway from this conversation with Axel McCallum is to see technology as an enhancer and to leverage innovation as an opportunity to rethink legal frameworks and processes. I hope this episode was as inspiring for you as it was for me. Make sure to stay tuned for the next episodes.